have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here with another episode. Super excited today with me. I have Marla DiCarlo. She is the owner of Biz Navigators. Marla, welcome to the Business Broker Growth Show.
Thank you, Jason. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and this is fun. We're going to get into your background. It's also been a matter of persistence for us because we initially talked, I forget when that was, but it was months and months ago. I don't even think the show had come out yet. And we've been planning this, and then I got sick, and then you've been busy, and then I was busy, and we just kind of rescheduled, made this happen. And everything happens at the right time. And, you know, sometimes things line up really easily. And then other times like this, it's like, all right, we're going to do this today, no matter what. You know, you've got things going on all around, which we're going to talk about today. So I appreciate you being here. For people who don't know you, I'm going to give a little bit of the background and then we can dive into it. So you started out in the accountant world. And then at one point in your journey professionally, you were the co-owner and CEO of Raincatcher. Right, yep. Which is a business brokerage firm. And then you left that and then started Biz Navigators, working with consultants, entrepreneurs, like just people, business owners. So walk through a little bit of that journey as somebody who's, you know, background in merger and acquisitions from the accounting side to kind of this journey you've been on.
No, I'm glad you put it that way because it really is a large part of my journey. Because I started, you know, on the buy side originally back in 2002 in my career. And the first time I sat down with a family business owner, I just remember walking away from that meeting going, oh, I love these people. You know, it was the grit, the resilience, like just, I remember thinking to myself, these are my people. I totally get them. I understand why they're small business owners. And you know, what came out of that really was then I created, you know, my fractional CFO company in 2008 and was a pioneer in doing that. If you can believe, I used to have to explain to people what a fractional CFO did. they were like, never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, sold that, you know, then to private equity in 2016.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think about that where, you know, it's probably terms for it or no term for it prior to when it became this thing about fractional. I remember when I first started consulting years ago, it was essentially doing fractional, you know, chief revenue, chief sales type of work, but it wasn't really called that even then as well. It was just consulting, right? It wasn't a thing. It was like, what do you mean fractional? That sounds weird and expensive. What does that mean?
Yeah. Right. No, really. Yeah, it was. It was very difficult to help them understand what I would do, you know, but I mean, I did it successfully. You know, I built that company to a place where I sold to private equity, sold to a great group, but that's a part of my journey too, you know, because had I not been through that, I don't know that I would have because the next opportunity was Raincatcher. I was one of the founders. And because of that journey of before that, I had been through, I don't know, let's say 15 transactions, right? But I had never been through my own. And I can still remember, like I tell the story of sitting, I could still see the room, sitting in the training room. And the private equity guys had just walked out. There was two of them. And we were talking through strategy. And my training buddy sitting next to me, he was joining the team too. And I look over at him and I'm so irritated. And I said, they just tell me how they're going to change my services and they're going to fire a couple of my employees. And then, you know, we got to let go a couple of my customers. And without skipping a beat, my training buddy goes, yeah, the problem is it's not yours anymore.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was, you know, and again, it wasn't them. They were a fantastic group. It was just, I didn't realize that identity Yeah. Being a small business owner, start my baby, that's a real thing. So yeah. I need to go through that to appreciate what I do today.
It's interesting too, when you think of that journey and your arc in and around business and then through it and then out of it and then where you were on the buy side from an accounting. So you're like watching, you're handling things from the buy side. So involved with transactions, buying it. And, you know, employee with an accounting background is different than a business owner and the identity, like you said, as a business owner. It's one of the things that stood out when we first spoke is that identity of business owner is a real thing. That it's almost, it's basically seller's remorse afterwards of like, you know, what did I do?
You know, and I'll tell you, it happens more often than I think most professionals realize. So even in my industry, so what I mean by that is it's very different in the middle market, you know, how the transactions are handled, because you usually have, you know, an arm's length between the company and the executive team. There might be a founder, but, you know, they have a CFO, they have a COO, they usually have a CMO, you know, there's a legal department even, and it's just different where when you are in, you know, mid street, the lower market, and even more so in the main street, you are the face, name, and brand a lot of times, and you're wearing a lot of hats. And so I get business owners that come in to talk to me about selling their business, and I'll say to them, okay, now let's talk about the type of buyer that you want to sell to. And they'll go, what do you mean? And I'll talk to them a little bit about private equity or, you know, the different buy types, and they'll go, oh, I don't really care about that, Marla. My main objective is I just want to get this out of the transaction. And I used to go, okay, and move on. Now, after doing this for, you know, 15 plus 20 years, now I go, okay. And inside I go, we're going to park that. I guarantee you we're going to come back to it, because it does matter. It does matter to most, that legacy of who you hand the baton to.
With your exit from the fractional CFO side, was there a broker involved? How did that happen for you as the business owner?
Yeah, no, there was no broker. I was the broker. And I say that with all humility, but that was kind of my attitude back then. I was the broker, right? Because I thought, well, I do this for a living. I mean, at that point I had helped, I mean, easily over 500 business owners in my fractional CFO. And then let's add another, you know, 100 to the buy side of what I'd done. So I'm like, I got this. Yeah. And they contacted me and they said, hey, we, you know, we've been looking at your business and we're really interested and we like you and we would really like you to join our team. And, you know, after negotiating for, I don't know, about 3 weeks, I said, let's do this, because I had done my homework on the group and I thought, well, this is it. I mean, this is what I was looking for. And again, fantastic group. I have nothing negative to say about them. I just had never thought through, what will that look like, Marla, when you're not making the decisions anymore and you're still involved in the company? What does that look like?
Yeah.
I hadn't asked myself those questions.
Yeah. And you didn't have anyone guiding you. So like looking at that, obviously it went well enough. You got through it. I don't sense any tone of it went terribly bad. Like they took advantage of you and you got a really raw deal because you weren't represented by a broker. And so how does that shape, you know, at least the period of time, let's talk about the rain catcher era where you, where no worries. This is part of the deal, right? Like you're in deals, you got stuff going on. We were talking about it before recording where, you got a lot going on, which we'll get to in a little bit. Where, you know, with the rain catcher era for you, when you working with business owners looking to sell, how did that shape like your experience without help versus you being the help and trying to get people to not do it themselves?
You know what? That is a great question. because that actually is probably one of the that was probably one of the most important lessons that I gained through that experience was the empathy that is needed and the seriousness of that transaction for that business owner, because I know what it felt like for me. And so it just so happened, you know, it just fell into play. I mean, it was part of my journey that the Rain Catcher opportunity came up. I had known there was three founders, and I'd been with one of the founders for, including myself, two other gentlemen. And I'd been the CFO for one of them, and they knew my background. And they had this idea of, okay, we got this baby boomer transfer of wealth happening. But you know what's interesting is that no one is advertising to them online because it's such an old school industry. And this is where people go, no way. I'm like, I'm telling you, like I lived it. In 2016, when you would type in exit planning, there was no keywords around that. What that meant was succession planning. And then in addition, no one, I mean, there was maybe, I'll be fair, there was maybe like two groups online that were advertising to business owners about, hey, you want to exit, we'd love to help you, but let's also make sure you're ready to sell, type of thing. So that was what immediately came to my mind was, oh, guys, first off, yeah, we got this pay-per-click, you know, advantage, but what's even more important is we can differentiate ourselves by truly being advocates for the small business owner, getting them ready to sell. And that came from that experience of what I went through with my fractional CFO company. I realized, oh, there's a lot of questions that brokers are not asking the business owner, and let's change that.
And I think what's interesting is a lot of the brokers I speak with, they have either, they were part of a business and then they exited and they had a great experience with a broker and they're like, that was amazing and inspirational and I want to do that. Or they had a terrible experience with a broker and they're like, if this person can do it, I'm going to crush it because like, I'm going to do it way better because like I've talked to brokers where they're like, I ended up doing all the work myself. The only reason it closed is because of them, not because of the broker involved. And so it's interesting for you that you didn't have that. You had a good experience and then went into this. And I think the difference maker for you is that you had so much experience with the buy side, with watching people exit, with dealing with the financials, like you could manage it yourself in a way that most business owners can't. Somebody's doing manufacturing and they've been running a manufacturing company for 30 years. There's nothing parallel to help them with exiting themselves, which is kind of like, you know, where people think they can do it because they've done everything else. And so in that rain catcher mode, when you were doing that, how was that? And obviously that came to an end at some point. Talk about that kind of part of the journey.
Oh, it was a long journey, but man, it was fun. So, I mean, first off, going back to, you know, 2016 and 17, I still remember the first time we turned on our funnel. Like we turned on the marketing budget and it's like, okay, we're ready. And I had thought before, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be amazing if we brought in, I don't know, like 50 leads. Oh gosh, that would be incredible. We brought in 300 in 1 month. And I went, whoa, time out. I didn't realize this was going to be so popular. Like we got to get things structured because I wanted to protect brand, you know? So, So going back to that time frame, the most important thing for me was making sure that we protected our brand because there's a lot of exposure with that type of lead generation. And I thought, okay, the one thing that I'm going to make sure we do is we're going to lead with integrity and we're not just going to pick the low hanging fruit. So I had to then work first on systems, processes, and training my sales team because the sales team, obviously they want to get a deal done. And so some of them, you know, it was in the very beginning going, okay, guys, We use pipe drive. Our pipe drive's glowing red. What's going on here? Well, but I've got these others coming in that I know, but we, so a lot of it was figuring out the right cadence of nurturing our business owners, because what I learned was 25% of that came in through that type of marketing, you know, through pay-per-click and paid advertising. 25% were ready to buy from us, meaning they had already done the research, talked, they were ready. The other 75%, they didn't even know what that meant. You know, they were, it wasn't necessarily they were kicking tires. They were just like, well, I think I want to sell, but I don't even know what the process looks like. Am I ready? And what's the valuation? And who do I have a buyer? And so we put together a lot of material education, you know, blogs, video recordings, giving an assessment to help them determine if they were ready to sell. And once we narrowed in that, you know, okay, now we've got a way of educating that 75%. Then it was, okay, how now do we discern between those that really should go work on their business and they're not ready to sell? And again, remember, my North Compass was integrity. Like, we are never going to be that group that is proud of pushing them into an engagement and just getting it done. For me, I've always wanted to be the person that said, hey, business owner, you've got a good business, but, you know, let's talk about whether you're sellable and what does that mean? And so we did. So we finally figured out, okay, you know, if we do this with the 75%, about 48% of them will convert 2, 3, 4 years down the road. So after a while with Raincatcher, we had a really robust pipeline, and that's how we grew. I mean, we were growing 200% a year and won all kinds of awards. And, you know, really, I feel we were pioneers, definitely change agents in that beginning phase of the exit planning evolution for business owners.
And if you think about it, right, because the industry still has an education problem where business owners don't understand it. It's a little better now, but I know that there's still a gap between what business owners, founders think happens or should happen at an exit, or who could help them versus the reality. And so thinking back to those days and being able to turn that on and be online with ads and then drive that, you know, and then build the pipeline and say, stay long-term. What did you find, like, as you guys grew Raincatchers, that, you know, the transactional mode that some brokers can get into, especially like a franchise brokers where, you know, sometimes it's very transactional. They're just doing the deals versus the long-term vision versus the relational, the referrals, the, like you said, the people who might not be ready for 3, 4, 5 years and actually nurturing, you know, what did you see from your side?
Actually, to be just completely transparent, it was back then, it was very difficult to find the right broker for our company. Mm-hmm. Because we were not looking for the franchise type brokers that were out there. To just get an engagement. That wasn't what we were about. We differentiated ourselves by being like, it was very common for a seller to go, wow, you're the only broker that's asked me that question. Mm. And that was kind of our North Compass, you know, like, I hope that is what they say, because we wanted to be the type of brokers that only, first off, had listings that could sell, but second off, that we weren't, you know, there's a lot in there about, you know, like there's stats out there about 80%, you know, business owners listed, you know, in the lower market, mid-street market, they don't sell. And that is true. I think it's getting better, but that is true. And I remember when some of those stats came out and some of my colleagues, you know, and even brokers we had hired being frustrated by that. And I thought, but see, I look at it differently, because I used to say, I want to be the big fish in the big pond. And they would correct me and they would say, you mean the big fish in the little pond? I'm like, no, I want to be the big fish in the big pond. There is a volume of business owners with the baby boomer, you know, transfer of wealth that is huge. There's so many business owners. I want to be the person that people are pointing to saying, you've got to see what Raincatcher's doing and do something different. And so because of that, we had to hire a certain way, because I couldn't say that, like, do this and say that. And then a seller come in, right, and talk to one of our brokers. And then the feedback is, oh, all they cared about was just getting that engagement. I mean, my gosh, you know. So yeah. It took us a little while, in all honesty, to get that nailed down, you know, the training, the onboarding, the right type of hire that we were looking for. It was not an easy process, to be honest. You know, it's very transactional in our world.
Yeah.
There's a reason for it, but, you know, if you want yep. to stand out.
And it's tough too, but I know from running sales teams for so long is that if you have an abundance of leads, then it can be very transactional with that cherry picking of like, well, this person's ready to go and we'll just ignore the rest. And then it becomes transactional because you don't need to be as relational and care about the long-term, the experience, the referrals, anything about that, because you've got enough leads to work on, right? Like, you don't need to, yes. you know, your eggs, it's not like a, you know, an animal that has one baby at a time, right? Like humans, like you're putting all your effort into that one. You know, there's animals out there that have dozen, and it's like, okay, well, you know, hopefully they make it, but if not, yeah. right? And so you kind of have that same mode, and I could imagine that. And then, you know, also yeah. the world of brokers, and sometimes they're just transactional and they can make some commission. And, you know, if they're not thinking long-term, then you're probably going to end up with that. I could totally see that happening.
Yeah. Well, they got to pay their bills, right? Yeah. I mean, they have a family that they have to pay for. When you're commission-based, you know, you can get hungry. And so, you know, then we started figuring out, okay, what is the right, you know, pricing model? What is the conversion rates? You know, how do we figure out, okay, this business owner just doesn't know what they don't know yet. Mm-hmm. How do we spend a little time educating them, but yet not, you know, not picking low hanging fruit, but also investing our time wisely. And it's hard to do in this industry. Very hard to do.
For sure. Well, and I think that's a good segue. Obviously, this is the Business Broker Grow Show. So we want to talk about yeah. business broker stuff, which is yeah. why I appreciate the Raincatcher. But at some point that ended. You yep. transitioned out of that. I know that the education piece, working with owners, helping them actually prepare to sell, which I know is a huge blind spot where the transactional brokers are the people who need to sell, or maybe don't come from a background of understanding enough of the exit planning side, either do a disservice or just don't do enough for those owners. So tell me about that transition where you're like, this is going great at Raincatchers, but I'm destined for a new thing.
You know, as we grew and, you know, won awards and, you know, gained brand recognition in the industry. What I found is it was getting harder and harder to get our team to focus on, you know, the $1 million guy. And, you know, and I, you know what I discovered through my journey also is I actually really like that space. I don't mind doing handholding. And I don't mind, you know, when emotions get high, and for not everybody wants to deal with that. So I approached my management team and decided to do the buyout to start Biz Navigators. So Biz Navigators okay. is, I always say, staying in my swim lane. you know, we work primarily with business owners on average that are $5 million and below in revenue. And, you know, normally I'm not working with a business owner that's above a 10 million enterprise value. And most of them, the majority of them, I mean, easily 80% of them are SBA deals. And I really like it there. I found my niche. I found an area that I can really stand out. And what's most important to me is helping that small business community, helping that owner to have the best outcome that's available to them. So that's how Biz Navigators got started. You know, what we what I in the beginning, to be honest, I went, I think I just want to do this myself. So as a broker, you know, I went, I'm just going to stay boutique, but I'm a visionary. I don't have the squirrel mentality, but I'm a visionary. And I found myself like, oh, I want to do so much more than this, you know? So, yeah. So in the beginning, I went a totally different route. I didn't do any pay-per-click, very little marketing at the very beginning. And it was just word of mouth. And so what I would do is, you know, I got to know CPA firms, I got to know wealth advisors, you know, attorneys, other, you know, brokerages, investment banks. And I still was getting leads with Raincatcher. And so really what I've done is just built a reputation on being someone in my industry that has a lot of experience, and the accounting background does help me, you know, because I can do my own stuff. Like I talked to a broker the other day and he said, wow, so you can pretty much do your own recasts and modeling and sims. And I'm like, yep, which can have its disadvantages too, right? But so what's happened is I've been able to expand my practice, and I take care of, like, it was just announced, SDR Ventures announced me publicly that I'll be taking on their small business deals. They normally are working on, you know, anything from 75 million upwards to, you know, 300 million. And then, so they're going to refer those smaller deals. And I like being there. I like what I do. I like the owners. I like the buyers. I like what I'm doing.
So you said something, it's like, it's not always the best that you can do all of that and produce all of that. What do you mean by that? Do you get stuck in the trenches too much and not visionary enough?
Yeah. So I think one of the hardest things being a broker is being able to multitask and be on point. So it's interesting. I never thought about this way before, but I'm just going to throw this out there because it is very interesting. I think a lot of brokers will relate with this. I always found it difficult being a CFO because an accountant in general, there's really zero room for error, but I'm a human. So guess what? I make mistakes, you know, but you've got to be like, you've got to be knowledgeable with the current tax laws and be knowledgeable with different softwares, be knowledgeable in different industries, you know, be able to talk to different personality types. And it's hard to do all of that. That was probably the hardest thing in my CFO business, is to find other CFOs that could do that. Well, I find the same thing in the brokerage space. You can be specialized in something, and some are very good at doing that. But there's really zero room for error. You know, you can't be on the phone negotiating a deal and throw out somebody else's information or stumble on yourself, because guess what? That's going to, you know, move you away from the table, and it's not as easy to negotiate. So you got to be on point and you got to know your stuff. And so I rely a lot on systems and processes. And what I find is that my background helps me with that, knowing numbers, knowing how to negotiate, all of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So with Biz Navigators, what's the biggest thing you're seeing as you're helping these business owners?
I'm finding that more business owners are coming in with more knowledge, which is good. Because I think that a whole exit planning, now exit planning doesn't just go to succession. It's an actual keyword, you know, exit planning, there's SEPAs and there's, you know, the BEI group, like there's all these different groups now that focus on getting a business owner ready to sell. And that's become kind of the norm. I mean, a broker needs to have that knowledge in order to be effective, in my opinion. So I'm getting a lot of business owners that are coming to me saying, using, like, I call it the value builder language. I love the value builder group, and you know, that's the assessment I use. They know the value drivers. So they'll come in and they'll go, hey, so I'm thinking of selling, but I am owner dependent. I'm like, well, okay. Right. And also, you know, I know I've got some issues with, you know, cash flow, and I know I've got a little customer concentration, where before that was a foreign concept. Like they just didn't know what that meant.
And it's tough too, when they don't know what it means, humans, it's tough for humans to admit what they don't know and then acknowledge that maybe they're not in a good place or they have a problem, right? Oh. If they don't know anything about it and then you're like, hey, everything seems to be focused on you and dependent on you, right? Many times humans just going to default and say, no, it's not. It's like, oh, yeah, well, you have a client concentration problem. It's like, no, we're good. Like that's 70% of our revenue from one client. It's not a big deal. Like it'll be okay. Like, no, it is. That's a big deal.
That's part of I said we're rocking around calling their baby ugly. We just met them. Met them, right? They're like, hey, look at this pretty baby. We're like, oh, it's pretty ugly. Like, you know, because there's a valuation gap.
Yeah. And where they, you know, if they've done their research, then they can see pictures of other babies and realize like it's cute and it's theirs, but maybe it's not the prettiest baby out there, which is okay. And so, you know, I imagine that really helps because they're partway into the conversation already and educated. So you're seeing more business owners kind of understanding terms and the process. Where are they still struggling or unaware or misinformed?
Yeah. The biggest area I see where there's still a gap is how do they get their business ready to sell? Where do they start? Sometimes when I do workshops, I'll start with this analogy, and I think this is a great way to help wrap, you know, or metaphor or whatever, and help give some visualization to this. So I always talk about the blinders on a racehorse, because I grew up with horses, you know, and so I spent my whole life, and I know that they can see all around them and they get spooked, you know. So I talk about a racehorse, like there's a reason why there's little covers on the side over the cover that you put over their face, because it's to keep them focused on moving forward. Well, a business owner kind of has to do the same thing. We have blinders on, because as a business owner, you're just trying to grow your business, and everybody normally has owner dependency and is in the trenches at the beginning of their business. So they're just thinking about, how do I get that next sale? How do I get the next contract? When can I finally hire employees so I can see my family again? You know, that's serious. But the problem is that when you have those blinders on and it's tunnel vision, you're just looking straight ahead. You don't have time to think about the other things that matter. And it's funny how the things that matter with getting a business ready to sell also kind of is a secret sauce behind profitability. It kind of goes hand in hand. And so what I find is that gap exists with a business owner because they don't know when to take those blinders off, and they don't know how to do that. And they're afraid and they're overwhelmed. I still see a lot of that with business owners that come in. So they start the conversation with, I already know, I don't think I'm ready. I want to find out if I am or I'm not, and what my valuation is, and can I sell? But I, to be honest with you, if you tell me I'm not, I don't even know what to do with that.
Wow. That almost seems like a dream scenario, that they understand it and they're okay. Right. And then you can help guide them. Right.
Well, but then you gotta, you know, it's expensive to work with a coach. And it's also, remember, these are busy business owners. So how do they carve out that time to then get it ready? And most important, a lot of the business owners, especially in mid-street and lower market, a lot of them, unfortunately, they don't plan. It's like, there's different stats out there, but the most recent one I heard was only 40% of business owners currently plan for their exit. So it was, if I remember correctly, it used to be like 20%. So at least it's gone up. But if you think about business owners who are busy, then to plan for an exit, that's very difficult. And so what you get is, Marla, I cannot do payroll one more day. I cannot deal with not seeing to my family. You know, they're selling for the wrong reason. So it's not always ideal because you have to shift them from, no, listen, I can sell your business, but it's not worth what you think it is. Okay. So if that's okay with you, then let's plan for that exit. But if you want to get your business ready and you want to maximize the value, there's some work you still need to do. And that's overwhelming sometimes.
And that makes sense, right? Because, you know, if they're open to it and they can fit it in and they can, they're playing the longer game of what the next 1, 2, 3 years of planning and structure looks like. That's great. It's just, you know, they're that technician or that business owner with the blinders on and they're focused. And if they liked doing those things that also lead to profitability, they would have already been doing them, like the systems and the structure and the accounting and all of that planning, they would already be doing it. But the fact that they're not means it's going to take some effort.
Right. Because most of them don't, when you think about who are business owners, most of them don't even have business acumen. Most business owners go into running a business, creating a business because they were very good at what they did, or they love it. They have a passion for it. It's not because they go, yay, I love being an accountant. I love being in HR. I love employees, you know, like.
Yeah. They're that, you know, Michael Gerber E-Myth Revisited, you know, a lot of technicians start a business because they're good at whatever that widget making is. And then That's they right. end up with a business and employees and payroll. And decades later, they've got this thing that wasn't built to sell, but they're trying to sell.
When you think about that, that's one of the frustrations I know that brokers have is, man, it's really hard to figure out if they're ready to sell. You know, you invest all this time and energy. I bring these deals to them and then they go, oh boy, this is real. I don't know that I want to sell. Well, if you go back to, you said it in the beginning, a lot of them do not know what they don't know. And then I always add until they know it, because it's a process that they didn't understand until they go through it.
Yeah.
So if as a broker, you can start at the beginning with educating them on the process, putting a little more work in than just going forward to an engagement, put a little more work in and understanding, okay, are they ready? What is their post-closing? What does their business look like? Put on the buyer's lens. You know, if I'm a buyer, would I buy this business? If you spend a little time on the front side, then hopefully what we're doing then is we're listing owners who, one, are sellable, but then are ready to sell. The business owner's ready to sell. And so we're having better experiences as brokers with selling those businesses, and then we have happier people after they sell.
What's different about Biz Navigators than the Rain Catchers, either model or experience? You know, what is different about this for you than what you've been a part of?
Well, Biz Navigators, one is word of mouth. So we're not my marketing is not centered around how much pay-per-click, you know, can I get? It's not even a factor. I focused on education. So a lot of YouTube videos, a lot of social media, a lot of workshops, a lot of webinars, the podcasts. And then I think the other differentiator is the fact that we really do stay in our swim lane. So what I mean by that is, I have groups that I can refer to that are working on, you know, $25 million companies and $200 million companies. I do not need to do that. I have vetted professionals that are excellent at what they do in that space. My space is the Main Street mid market, and I know that very well.
I think that's great. And I think, you know, there's brokers out there who specialize and have like married an industry. And then what I hear from you, though, is you're focused on the revenue group, but the revenue is the outward vanity metric of the type of owner that you like working with and helping and educating and kind of being that person, which ties back all the way to the very beginning when you fell in love with small business owners when you're on the buy side.
It is. And it feels good to be able to know what swim lane I'm in. There's no confusion.
It's really valuable too, because once you know who you can and want to help, then it's really easy to not try to squirrel and chase or help everybody and then get all over the place and then do a whole bunch of things semi-okay, right? Yeah. Versus becoming really good at one category, one group, one type, whatever that looks
like. You know, that's funny you said that, because I can remember talking when I was with Raincatcher, like doing presentations and talking about the one thing. I don't know if you've read that book.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And I would always bring it up. But then when I would bring it up, I can remember thinking to myself, are you practicing that? Because love people, first off, and I love helping others. And it really is important to me to make a difference. It's the way I'm wired. But I was taking on too much, I think, at Raincatcher. Mm. Like, you can't be good at everything. And now I can. Now I know. I know the one thing.
Yeah, you got your one thing. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move to the next section. I want to talk about marketing tips. This is the broker growth section with the marketing strategies. You know, obviously you've been a part of a company that then, you know, made its mark with the paid media, and then you're in a different mode now. Let's talk about what you see works, or the kind of the suggestions you have, the tips for brokers on the marketing and pipeline growth side. So what's the first thing that kind of comes to mind that you put on a list? Not necessarily number one on the list, but least on the list.
Yeah, number one is not skimping on the information gathering stage. That is so important. Also being organized and how you collect that information. So I can remember when Raincatcher, like, we were trying to figure out what is the best way to get the information from the business owner to provide evaluation. You know, should we first ask for the taxes? Well, everybody's like, why do you want my taxes? I just met you, you know? And then it's like, well, okay, so financials at a minimum. Well, geez, I would, you know? So trying to figure out the right cadence again when you request that information, but then also how do you handle that information? So one of the things we did is we instantly realized, oh, okay, tax returns may be too soon to ask that in the first 30 minutes. Financials are okay, but what we do is remind them we're all about confidentiality and protecting your information. So here's an encrypted link you upload it to. We're going to protect it. If we don't do business, we get rid of it, you know, a couple months later, so that we're being serious professionals, but then we're also putting that client first and gathering the information we need, so we're not giving them the wrong information.
It makes sense, right? It's both being organized and then also, you know, managing it and then collecting it and then protecting it. And it is tough. Like, obviously there's some people you could talk to, business owners, where they're ready or they're eager or they're just that personality where they just share all their financial stuff. Generally, it's too early on a first date to be asking for some of that stuff. So makes sense. You kind of got to ease into it, but then also collect it and then manage it appropriately, for sure.
Right. Right. You don't need to be talking about having kids maybe on the first date.
Maybe, you know, that might work sometimes if there's a good enough connection, but generally it's not, you know, it's too early for sure. So that's the first one on the list. What's next? What else do you
have? So second one I think is you don't have to be an expert in everything, and actually I found that business owners will have more respect for you when you when you don't act like you're the know-it-all. You don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You know, so let me give an example. Like, I realize now, maybe in the beginning of Raincatcher, I expected too much from my brokers because I'm an accountant. And so I really didn't understand, why can't you talk about their balance sheet, or why can't, you know, like, unrealistic expectations. I realize now what I should have been training my brokers to do was send that over to the analyst. You do not need to know that information. You should know the highlights once it's been put together for you. That's important. And then, you know, like sometimes also I would hear the brokers giving advice that I would think, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. We are not attorneys. It's okay to say, hey, this has been my experience. Here's how I handled things. But we really need to talk to your attorney about that. So,
yeah,
you know, again, just you don't have to be the expert in everything. You need to be the expert in what you do.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like thinking about your accounting and the financial side, it's like you can see the Matrix. If you're familiar with the movies, like you can see the Matrix and then it's tough to not expect everyone else to see it because you can see it. I've had that before on the sales side, right? Like just because I can see the Matrix and sales and personalities and kind of conversations and what's happening, like not everybody can. And it can be very frustrating if you're not aware that like everyone's in a different mode and to focus on what they're good at and different personalities. You know, very rarely somebody in a more sales focused role, which is basically what a business broker is going to have a strong financial acumen and be able to go through financials in the same way that a trained, experienced accountant CFO is going to be able to do, for sure.
Dovetailing off of that, being okay saying that, like it doesn't make you weak to say, you know what, this is not my area of expertise. And so I've got the person who is the expert. Let's bring them in.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a professional balance with this is not my area, but I know the person and let me find the person, and being that almost the quarterback for the team instead of the have one doing everything. Yeah. Unless you use that all the time. Well, this is also not my area expertise. At some point the business owner will be like, wait, what are you good at?
Good point. Because I've seen that before, you know, and really? I have those conversations like, okay, you have got to prep. You cannot get on a phone call to talk about a business and literally not know the basics of the business. Like that does not make us look professional.
No, you have to be good at something. If you're not good at something, you know, then what's the point? So, all right. So let's talk about number three. Yeah. What next?
Yeah.
What's next on the list?
Valuation is what comes to mind. And that's several components to that, but it's better to under promise and over deliver, and and that has so much truth to that in our industry. One, if you overprice a business, good luck. And we've all done that. I've done it, you know, where I've really thought I've done my homework, price of business. I have crickets.
Really?
And then I think the other thing around that is under help that making sure that as an owner, as a business owner, that you're listening to that professional. And then in turn, then that's the broker's responsibility to be able to help them understand why they're being valued. So here's a great example. I know we've all heard this before. Well, my CPA did a valuation and this is what they came back with. Mm. Well, the answer there, this is how I would say it, is there is a big difference between you know, a valuation for key man insurance or for your balance sheet for equity than there is for a market valuation, because a buyer is going to pay what the business is worth to them. And that is driven by market data. So as a broker, you've got to make sure that you've done your homework there, that you've looked at the market industry information. You really have pulled the comps. I've seen that too. I've seen where, you know, brokers have said, well, it's the 2x. And I'm like, I mean, I know that businesses and, you know, the 2 to 3 million. Yeah. I can see that being 2x, but you know, this is a, you know, SaaS based business with a lot of, you know, they check a lot of the value drivers. I think if you do, if you actually pull the comps, you'll find this is closer to a 3.5-4x. Yeah. So that valuation is really important. highlight again, you don't want to overpromise, but you also want to do what's right and do your homework, both on the buyer's side. I mean, I'm sorry, the broker's side, and also on the seller side, so that you're talking the same language and you agree on the right price.
I think that makes sense, and I think these tips are good because, you know, when I think about what you've said from, you know, the documentation and gathering it in the beginning, and then, you know, not having to be the smartest person in the room, and then this valuation under, over, just making sure it's accurate, you're listing at the right price and setting the right expectation. It's like all of that is so important, because as we're talking about broker growth, like there's the marketing piece, which is feeding it, but you have to do the right thing coming out the other end. Otherwise, yes, what you're going to do is spend all of your time in these transactions that are going sideways or messy or don't even close. And then you're not getting to all of your parts as a business broker, right?
That's right. Right. And nobody's happy then. The broker's nobody's not happy. The buyer's not. Well, maybe the buyer's happy.
Maybe if you underpriced it, for sure. So, So segueing from that, let's talk about, you know, unhappy. This next part here is the deal that got away. So this is always the lessons of the lost deal. Everyone has a story or experience of something that didn't close or went sideways or wasn't ideal. And, you know, the kind of cautionary tale or lesson from it. Usually, you know, when I talk to a broker, you know, there's some kind of story or something in the past. And then from the time, you know, we have initial conversation, we talk about the podcast or recording, usually there's recent stuff that's kind of bubbled up as well. So for you, what comes to mind as you think of maybe a transaction that should have closed but didn't, or one that did but didn't go well?
So there was a pet product business that I listed. Okay. And great business. Had a lot of intellectual property in the products that they sold, like very specialized, and had owned the brand, you know, like a Kleenex. They were the brand. And but the owner had ran the business like a lifestyle business. Mm. And their words, they knew that coming in. They told me that. It's not like they hid it from me. They said, I created this business because I really wanted to be a part of my kids' lives, and I wanted to utilize my skills. You know, I'm smart, I'm educated, and I found this need, and I've been very successful. But they hadn't really done anything to, you know, expand the brand. And so they had had some, you know, revenue declines over the years, but there was always a reason why. And, you know, the cash flow could have been a lot stronger for the years that they've been in business. Anyway, long story short, when they came to me, I priced them the right way. But I allowed myself to believe that the right buyer type was private equity. And there was all these reasons why. I mean, I'm not an idiot when I say that. It's like, this was a lower market deal, and private equity is doing, you know, bolt-ons and adding to the portfolios for different reasons, very much more common than it used to be even 7 years ago. But I just, my gut told me, this is not a private equity play. This is not and her, you know, the person's, you know, had a background with family members that had been in the business, and they were positive it was. And instead of standing my ground, even though I knew that was the right thing to do, I went, okay, well, let's see what we get. Right. But what ended up happening, and she was under a time frame too, and what ended up happening is, unfortunately, we didn't find the right buyer, not because her business wasn't sellable. It was just that we weren't focusing on the right buyer. And that was a lesson for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's tough, right? Because you have a feeling, and experience says what is the best way to go. You know, ignore that or set that aside and go with what they think, thinking, okay, well, they might know, or it might work. It's tough, right? It's hindsight. You just never know if you had not gone that route, who knows what would have happened? Would it have sold?
I would have been, it would have been better. So I have no problems with taking accountability because I'm the professional. I'm the one that should have said, if you want to move forward with me, I don't list businesses I can't sell. And I'm telling you that these are the groups that we need to look at. And if we do find one of these other groups, I should have prepared them for what the ask was going to be. Because I did actually find some groups, but they wanted, you know, an earn out for, you know, 5-7 years. And they wanted, you know, the involvement from the owner for the next 2 to 3 years. And I brought that up, but I didn't highlight it in a way where when then I brought those buyers, it was like, well, no, we talked about this, right? So yeah, hindsight's 20/20, and I learned from that, and I will never make that mistake again. I 100% will tell the owner, the business owner, the hard truth. That's my job. Yeah.
It is. And it can be difficult, and short term, it can definitely be a challenge. Might even lose as a client. You do enough of this, enough anything in sales, which is what this is, and you realize like not doing it or bringing it up now and hoping it's going to work out never does. And it only gets worse as you go along. And then there's time and effort wasted. So I appreciate you sharing that, because I know that's not a fun story to share, but it's a really good lesson. And I appreciate the fact that you shared it and you also learned from it.
I did. And, you know, I think that's part of us getting better in our professions is you're not going to be perfect at everything. It goes back to the accountant analogy, you know, where I was saying you got to be perfect at everything. Well, you can't be. You're human. No.
It's the human part of being a human. It's a tough one for sure. So, well, Marla, I appreciate you being on here. We're going to wrap up the main part and then we'll have our after show like always do. For people who want to reach out to you and find you, you do a lot online. It's one of the things I appreciate about you is that you do create a lot of content. You have a lot out there. People want to find you. It's biznavigators.com. So it's B-I-Z navigators.com. They can find you on LinkedIn. Again, Marla DiCarlo, your email, YouTube channel, everything will be in the show notes. I know they could just search for your name, search Biz Navigators, again, with a Z. They're going to find you everywhere and find lots of content and hopefully get on that education journey. And so it's great to see all the content that you create out there. So I think it's so valuable.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I hope it's helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know it's not easy. I know it's a lot of work. We deal with that a lot on our side all the time. So, and I appreciate you being on the show and sharing all this. I'm excited for the after show. We're going to talk about the usual questions there. And I'm curious to see what your answers are, but, that's going to be it for the main episode. Marla, again, thanks for joining me and talking through so much of your journey with the audience.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. This has been a great time spent. Thank you.
Yeah. And for everyone tuning in, as always, make sure to like, subscribe. And, you know, whether you're a business broker or a business owner, if you found this episode, make sure to check out Marla's links and her content. You know, one of the things that it drives me and one of the reasons why I do this show and the work that we do is to amplify the professionals out there who are not the transactional brokers that, you know, Marla and I were talking about early on the episode, but the ones that really come from integrity, do the right thing for business owners and treat it like a profession, even though it's not really licensed like a profession. But, you know, focus on that. So it's really about getting this out there to more and more people and helping just educate the whole sphere of that. And then from our side, you know, Marla does a lot of great content. If you want help with that level of authority, or if you're looking like at Marla's content going, that's a lot of work, I don't know where to get started, definitely reach out to us, because that's the kind of work that we do with other brokers out there and help them. So that's it for this episode. And as always, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.